Hey everybody, welcome to the In and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Leverage, and with me is James Beckett.
Yo.
And I'm off the clock, but I'm here anyway, so you should be happy about that, I guess. Yeah. But there was a new
talk about.
Yeah, we have some stuff to talk about. So I didn't want to go into this cold because I got wind of this story about yesterday, and we've got our article up today. And this is regarding a recent book ban by a Florida public school regarding the manga itself is Sasaki Miyano Volume 1. And I'm mad. I hope people can like kind of tell, like you should kind of be pissed off about this. Like this book banning thing has been building up for a while. And so this is maybe the first time recently since the giant uptick that it's come for manga, a manga title specifically. And lo and behold, the application to have it removed is just beyond ridiculous. It kind of just sheds a light on exactly how much information the people who are doing this effort have, which is almost none. So we're gonna talk about that. But before we dive into all of that, we're also going to talk about Yatagarasu. We got two episodes of that to talk about. Two episodes of Dead Demons Dead Destruction. James and I are gonna share, kind of in solidarity, I guess, three of our favorite queer manga that we've read. Then go check out, buy a copy of. Hopefully you can get it at your local library. If you can't get it at your school library, so we're going to share those, but lo and behold, my first episode back and with such a heavy topic, we actually have a sponsor for this podcast. These are separate than the ones that you get when you download us on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you listen to podcasts. We have a sponsor with Height, and so I have an ad to show you guys, and then we're going to get right into the thick of it. So just a moment. And I think we'll just go full screen on that.
Are you looking to showcase your love for anime in a unique way? Check out Height's official collaboration cases. Whether you're a fan of Silver Wolf, Persona 3 Reload, or Mori Calliope, Height has you covered. With their PC components ecosystem, building your dream setup has never been easier. You can personalize your Height collab case with touchscreen upgrades and a thick liquid cooler for that extra flair. Use code ANIME10 for 10% off all in-stock items on height.com.
So Height is our sponsor for this today. And if you didn't catch that, if you put in anime10 at height.com to buy a case, you'll get 10% off. I could probably just put a little scroll on for that. What do you guys?
I'm not going to lie. That Persona case is just sick as hell.
It is truly sick as hell.
I'm looking at my case right now and I'm thinking, why can't, what's wrong with you? Why can't you be like that?
Yeah.
And the answer is because I don't have money, but someday.
Someday. So if you want to use that code, I put it in the chat here for you guys. You can go to height.com and check out those cases. And, maybe if you're in the market for a new one, pick one up. But be sure to use our coupon code there and save some money. Okay. So let's get right into the news. The big story that we're going to be talking about here is regarding a public school in Florida. This specifically is the Brevard County School District. And on August 27th, they had a school board meeting where they went over some of the titles that people have submitted for removal. And one that they agreed on is the first volume of Sho Harusano's Sasaki and Miyano. For those who aren't familiar with this manga, this is a boys' love manga. It stars two boys who start out liking each other and then start to really, really like each other. It takes place in a high school. There's a manga or an anime adaptation as well. Nicholas Dupree reviewed that for us when it aired. There's also quite a few spinoffs. It's a popular title.
Yeah.
But one of the first things, at least regarding volume one, that I'd like to point out is that it is not pornographic. There isn't explicit sex in Sasaki and Miyano. There's not explicit kissing or nudity in the first volume of Sasaki and Miyano. It's just a gay romance, but it has, the same kind of pacing that maybe you'd come to expect from it's rated teen. So it has that sort of pacing for the romance in there. There's some, a couple other couples in it as well. But what got me up in a flurry about this. I mean, other than the fact that there has been an uptick in book bans in Florida, related
to Utah
and Utah,
all over the country. Sorry. Yes. I teach in the public school system. Mm-hmm. I teach English. And so this is an issue that is, I don't want to say near and dear to my heart, but you know, near and dear to the fetid pit in my stomach that is screaming every single day about the stupid nonsense that our country gets up to.
Yeah.
I also want to say, as someone that has family that lives in Florida, there are many Floridians that think this is also stupid.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would like to point that out. At the same time, for all of our non-American viewers and listeners, I also want to make sure that I acknowledge that the rest of the country, by and large, also recognizes that Florida is doing this to itself.
Yeah, Florida's government, I guess, is the state government of Florida, is predominantly responsible for this. There's been a lot of campaigning and talking, specifically from their governor, DeSantis. I mean, without getting into like the history of Florida politics, a lot of what's going on there is directly credited to DeSantis and his efforts to make it very difficult to exist as a LGBTQ person, mm-hmm. in the state of Florida in a variety of ways. And that includes having adolescents having access to media that depicts homosexuality in any kind of way. And so again, we're not talking about access to explicit pornography. You can't get that in any variety in a school library. It doesn't, you know, but this is mentioning of it, any discussion of it, gender identity or like sexual orientation. So I first got wind of this because of Jennifer Jenkins, who is on the school board in Brevard County. She's been making a lot of efforts to combat this. And so she shined a big spotlight on it when it went through. Also, regardless of the homosexual content, when they decided to ban this, it was also because it's read from right to left. And that's weird. Weird, yeah. Is me putting, they didn't literally say weird, but
but they're not being subtle in that they don't care about, mm-hmm. protecting the children from pornography. That's
right.
They're not actually, well, I don't want to paint with a broad brush. I have to assume they're not actually stupid enough to believe that any of the material that they're banning is legitimately pornographic, unless they're the kind of people that think that like two people touching when they are of the same sex automatically counts as porn.
Right.
It's just a convenient excuse to get rid of anything that they perceive as being outside of the norms that they are trying to, ironically, indoctrinate their children into following.
Right. I'm going to pull it up right here. This is part of the actual complaint about the book that was filed that got it to be reviewed in the first place. And it's kind of infuriating. So, like I said, Jennifer Jenkins Brevard shared this. And if you can't read it, the person who filled this out said that this book, they didn't feel like it was appropriate for anyone at any age level between K through 12th grade. And that they believed that children are being harmed by being exposed to, this is a quote, age inappropriate, obscene, explicit content. These experiences can lead to struggles with porno, compulsive masturbation, sexual identity, shame, self-esteem, and developing and maintaining healthy relationships. So I'm sorry, it is hilarious to me that someone thinks Sasaki and Miyano could cause you to become like a serial masturbator. There's a lot of this that doesn't make sense.
The out and out idiocy. I'm sorry, I'm getting riled up, but this is
okay. It's okay.
I have to. There are districts in my state that are doing this.
Yeah.
So it is creeping across the country like an infestation, and it is a nightmare. And the sheer all-consuming idiocy that one has to possess to just unironically say that I don't want my kids to struggle with sexual identity and shame, so you know what I'm gonna do is I'm going to ban all of the literature that could potentially make them feel like they're not alone in the world and that there are actually healthy and okay ways to be represented and to live.
And this is just page 2 out of 3. The earlier page, they admit that they have not read the book. They have not read.
They can't read. Of course,
they have not read the book. They have not read any reviews of the book, and that their perception of Sasaki Miyano Volume 1 is entirely based on reading a summary of the book. So you know that they don't know what content is inside because they didn't even look at it,
and they don't care. They don't care. They just want to get rid of anything that could potentially make their kids think that being gay is not a sin. That's all they want. That's all they want. They will get rid of any. I have been called so many horrendous and awful things because I dared to feature short stories and optional books in my classroom that had gay people in them. They weren't even about relationships. They just had characters that identified as gay, and people complained and people freaked out.
Because
again, to exist to them is a crime. If you do not fall into these umbrellas, and it is it's evil, honestly. It's evil.
So there's other comments in here where they basically say like anything regarding like LGBT homosexual orientation just should not be available at all and should only be done at home. But you know, like the people who do this are not, they don't have a welcome home for their queer kid if their primary concern day to day is making sure they can't look at books with gay people in them. Yeah, like,
and they don't give a shit if straight people are making out and kissing left and right. I mean, people have pointed out that the lady on the school board recommended freaking Chainsaw Man.
Yes.
As an alternative, which is like, yes, please, let's expose our K-12 kids to Chainsaw Man.
It's on this form actually. So it wasn't the school board member, but the lady who filled out this form gave a variety. And I guess I don't know for a fact it's a woman. I'm basing that on their handwriting. That they gave a variety of alternative options for Sasaki and Miyano. And that did include Chainsaw Man, which includes a graphic hand job with semen, as well as like,
and lesbian demon orgies.
That's not even talking about how violent it is. Yeah. Like, there's a scene where someone's decapitated head shows up on a sushi thing. You know, like it's not. I mean, I read it every week, but it's not something I would. I don't even. You know, yeah, it's not something I would recommend to school children. 2 year eternity. I don't really have an issue with that one actually, other than you know, it's gonna. It's tragic. Young Miss Holmes, which again, I don't know enough about to say one way or the other, but they also have the Seven Deadly Sins, which I believe is like full of a lot of fan service.
There's so many gin tits in that show, if I remember right.
And Sailor Moon, which is famously not gay at all. So
yeah. The point is they don't actually know what they're talking about.
No.
They just want to feel like they're involved in this idiotic culture war. By banning a thing because that makes them feel like they've accomplished something. Even though, only idiots ban books, for one thing. Let's just get that out there. You only ban books because you're afraid of what people will do when they are educated and informed. Mm-hmm. And two, they can't be bothered to read a comic book made for 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
They lack, you know, like they can't even, you know, they can't even do that because they have no curiosity. They have no desire to have empathy or understanding for any perspectives that could potentially make them think different things than what they've been told to think their entire lives. They are fundamentally incurious, insincere, and hard-hearted, cruel people.
Yeah.
And they do it all under the guise of protecting children, where they don't give a shit about children.
No.
At all. They would gladly see hundreds of LGBTQ and minority kids kill themselves or get killed. As long as they don't ever have to worry about the unbearable shame of having one of their own kids hold hands with someone of the same sex. So
it's just disgusting. And so to give some of the legal background on this, and if you head over to Anime News Network, we have an article that talks about the Florida laws that are in play here that have started, you know, kind of started this. But Florida passed a House bill called 1467 in July 2022, and it went into effect at the beginning of 2023. And they already had a statute at the time that required school libraries to only include books pre-approved or vetted by a holder of a, quote, a valid educational media specialist certificate, end quote, from Florida's Department of Education, or the staffers could be charged with a third degree felony. So people need to also understand, these aren't just removing the books, but it's also trying to like ice opposition from librarians and educators under fear of, if you have a felon, I mean, you can't continue to teach as a felon.
J.D. Vance and all of his Project 2024 goons have been on the record to say that they think that any teacher that allows students to read books with pornographic content like fucking Sasaki and Miyano should go to jail.
Yeah.
Like what the Nazis did.
Yes.
Like literally what the Nazis did. So this is where we're at.
Yeah. So that's where we're, I mean, so that's what's going on in Florida regarding those legal issues. There has been, since this happened, an uptick of almost, I think it was 67% more like forms like these to remove books since. One of the positive things, I guess I can say, is that the publishers are finally putting a foot down, and many of the major publishers are now presenting a lawsuit against Florida because it's affecting, you know, their bottom line, but also,
it's an egregious violation of like the fundamental right to freedom of speech that we're all about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to get heated. Like, this is evil. What's happening right now in this country?
Yeah.
And I've already told my colleagues, if anyone ever tried to come for the books in my classroom, I quit. Like, I'm done. Like, I'm not going to participate in a system that is going to try to tell people that it is okay to deny them the opportunity to learn about other people and their lives and experiences just because mom and dad say that those people aren't as good as the rest of us and they don't deserve to have their voices spread and shared. Like that's evil.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's just evil.
Yeah. I mean, you can have whatever conversations you want with your children about any topics that they might encounter. I've had those. And I hopefully have set good examples for my kids when it comes to this kind of stuff. And that's the most you can hope for as a parent. But if for some reason one of my kids didn't feel comfortable talking to me and they wanted to seek out a book to like for references or to like see if they could find something that speaks to them to comfort or relate to or help them about because they don't want to talk to an adult about it, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's what libraries are for.
Yeah. Also, if you think that your children are so fragile and easily brainwashed that these precious, incredible, wonderful, delightful beliefs that you think are so fundamental to the backbone of our society could be threatened by them reading a comic about two Japanese boys that hold hands and occasionally smooch, then maybe you don't actually have as much faith in your values as you think. And also maybe all of you people that are arguing that, oh, well, they should teach the kids about this outside of the school. None of these people that are writing these book banning complaints are teaching their kids shit. Because they clearly don't know how to form coherent and cohesive thoughts. And if you thought you were such a good teacher and such a good educator, and if you thought that your beliefs and your values were so just verboten, then why should you be afraid if they read a comic book about two Japanese boys that hold hands and occasionally smooch? What's that going to do?
Yeah,
because obviously they're going to have this wonderful, incredible education that you're giving them at home outside of school, right? So what's that going to do?
There's obviously a disconnect here because these are also people who don't understand like how gender identity and things work. And it's not just about getting like a funny idea in your head after reading a book and then committing your entire life to it. Like there was, oh God, it was a comedian.
Guys, being queer is not a meme. You morons.
It's not
a mind virus that's going to spread because of the kids are posting their TikToks.
Yeah, it's
like what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
I'm trying to, I think it was an Australian comedian who did a stand-up thing that went viral maybe like a year or so ago, and it was just really funny. Like, anyone chooses to be part of a discriminated group by choice. Like, yeah, dude, I read a comic and thought it'd be really fun to be gay so that my parents would hate me and maybe kick me out of the house. And then I'd, you know, have to struggle like getting good health care or have to come out to my conservative doctor, maybe move to another state so that, you know, I think we've gotten rid of all the sodomy laws. But I mean, some of those were still in the books for a long fucking time. Look it up.
I can guarantee you that there are, what are they, the shotgun laws? I'm certainly going to try to sneak it in there. I can guarantee you.
Yeah.
And some budget reform. Oh, and by the way, if you stick anything up in the, up the back door, you're going to prison.
Yeah.
And then we're also going to rebalance our fiscal sheets for 2028. Like.
Yeah. I mean, I'm laughing because it's outrageous. Like, all of it is just so outrageous. It's, if you don't laugh on it at it, then you're terrified because it's also terrifying. I mean, it's just. I don't know, man. Like, I've known a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different identities, a lot of different orientations. There's nothing in common with their parents. And I don't know anyone who has successfully made someone not gay. They just don't have a relationship with their kid anymore. So what are you doing?
Or they force their children to live horrendously depressing and unsatisfying lives where they're lying to themselves every single day. Because they're too afraid to be their true selves, lest they be ostracized by the community and the family that they think is their entire world.
It's just, I think what I would love to see is, and it's sad to know that there are people so set in this that they would rather do this than build community and be welcoming and open and loving towards their children and different people. It's just this push to homogenize doesn't work. And it's just, I felt like we were making progress. You know, it always feels like we're making progress and there's always an immediate backlash to that progress, right? Like, I grew up with Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah.
And that was actually considered as, at the time, like kind of a middle meeting point where it was like, oh, well, you can be gay. Just don't tell anyone about it and don't let us find out, which basically means like you can't have any relationships while you're in the military, at least not ones where we could figure out that you're dating someone of the same sex because then you're out. But and I remember when that was thrown out. And I mean, I know exactly where I was when the Supreme Court decision came down that made gay marriage legal.
Me too.
Across the United States. I know where I was.
I was standing right outside the front doors of the college that I was at getting my teaching license.
Yeah.
And I hooped and hollered and cheered and all of my colleagues were like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I was like, guys, did you just see that? This is incredible.
Yeah.
And to anyone that's thinking that that we're getting too worked up over this or whatever, let me just tell you that this is the kind of stuff that gets people killed.
Yeah.
And like, that's not an exaggeration. Like, I work in the school system. I have worked with kids that have been sent to hospitals that have tried to take their own lives. I know of kids that have taken their own lives because of the bullying, because of the harassment, because of the abuse from their parents. So like, this isn't something to just roll our eyes at and say, oh, Florida. Like, no, like this is, like when I said this is evil, it's because it's people willingly sacrificing children on the altar of their stupid political ideologies. And it's just, it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong.
So. Yeah, it's very easy to look at it. It's just like, well, this is just one book that you can't read at school. You can go get it somewhere else or you can order it off Amazon or your school doesn't need to provide it. So, you know, it's one thing to kind of look at it that way, but like for people in the queer community, kids especially, I mean, this is more like a signal. It's like, yeah, maybe I wasn't even ever going to read that book, but you're basically telling me that there's something unethical about my existence and artistic depictions of my existence. And so so I don't have a right to be here in this space. The space is not safe for me because you all think I'm a fucking weirdo. or whatever, right? It's
yeah, when
it's,
when it's all just thousands of parents across the country are saying to merely depict gay people doing the exact same things that straight people have gotten to do in media for hundreds of thousands of years is it should be punishable as a crime for the teachers, for the librarians, for the publishers, whatever, to say that this is obscene and harmful and dangerous is sending a very clear message.
Yeah.
And kids are not stupid.
No.
Kids are not ignorant to this. No matter what these people think, they think their kids are stupid. They think their kids are these mindless little puppets that exist purely to be molded like little Play-Doh golems. But no, they're people just like everyone else. And they pick up on this and it digs deep. And sometimes it leaves scars that will never heal.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
So
screw you, Ron DeSantis.
Seriously. And hopefully, I mean, I'm hoping that with the lawsuit from Penguin Random House, Simon Schuster, HarperCollins, they filed this all on Thursday, that might at least provide a stopgap of some kind. You know, I know people have concerns about if this particular thing makes it to the Supreme Court because of how the Supreme Court is currently filled, that it would be a negative, but they've surprised me a few times actually. So I don't know if we're down for the count, if this went to like a higher federal court.
Yeah.
But you know, and I guess it's like, I guess to turn things around, because this is what James and I said we would talk about, is we're going to recommend three of our favorite queer manga.
Yeah.
That, we hope you listeners will check out and read however you can get your hands on it. I'll go first.
By the way, for anyone listening that is maybe, you know, short on funds and wondering how they can legally and ethically access this material, let me tell you that the Libby app and other apps like it, all you need to do is register for a library card, which a lot of libraries let you do online without having to go in person. And you can check out books like some of the books that we're going to talk about today. And you can read them on your own devices without having to worry about, you know,
people. Anyone seeing you with it. Yep. Trying to control your access to it. You can read it privately. Highly, highly recommend. I'll put information about the Libby app in the description of this video after we wrap up recording. But that's a really good call, James. So Dusty asked, can I access it in Florida still, though? So yeah, because I think if they let you do it online, you could probably register for a library card in a different state. But
that's technically not legal.
Okay, don't do that. It's not legal to do that.
Don't do that. But it wouldn't be difficult to do that, unfortunately, for the system. So
yeah. Also, the school libraries and the state libraries aren't the same, so it is still possible within your state. If you can't get it at your school library, it may still be in the public state library, so maybe check there. Okay. So I'm going to start first. So this is one that I read. It really touched me. It's cute. It's more of like a family comedy. Takes place from the perspective of the mom. And I think anyone could read this regardless of... it has something to offer for a lot of different age groups, whether you relate more to the teenager or whether you relate more to the parents. But this is I Think Our Son Is Gay. And so for this book, I think he's either late middle school or early high school boy. He also has a younger brother. His mom suspects that her son is gay, that based just around his how he talks about one of his other male classmates. He also does a lot of like slips of the tongue. He's very kind of straightforward. He's not good at hiding it, so to speak, but she has no interest in outing him. So this is just kind of about her supporting him in her own way. And later on also having some of those more difficult conversations with her husband, who is more kind of gender normative and has expectations for his sons because they're boys. Regardless if that's what they want to do or not. So, yeah. So in my opinion, it's really, really good. It's super cute. Let me pull up the encyclopedia page so you can kind of see it. So yeah, this is, I think our son is gay. This is the encyclopedia page on Anime News Network. So far, I believe there's probably more than four out, but we have reviews for all four volumes on Anime News Network if you'd like to read the reviews first before checking it out. It's by Okura, and it's published by Square Enix Manga and Books.
Yeah.
So the family is the Aoyama family, and the sons are Hiroki and Yuri, where Hiroki here is the likely gay son.
And I think stories like that are so valuable too, because especially in Asian cultures, Japanese culture, the divide between generations and the divide between parents and children is such a touches on so many different aspects of everyday life, right?
Yeah.
The expectation to live up to your parents' expectations, the desire to feel accepted and approve. Acceptance and approval from your parents, that's already just such a fundamental kind of inextricable part of the art and the media and the culture.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine how much harder it is for non-straight, non-cisgendered Japanese people to cope with all of the different, the different navigational foibles that come with trying to grow up and become a young adult. And so I think it's really nice to have stories about, parents and children, like having those positive and healthy bonds.
Yeah. When I read it, it really got me as a mom. It really got me like all emotional and stuff, just to see like support. And I could see how like a book like this could be really good for kids who maybe to let them know that like, even if the adults in your home aren't understanding or there for you the way that you need, like there are adults that will be, and you might find them as a school counselor or a close friend's parent instead, or just there are other like clubs and things like that where you can maybe find those people who will help you and listen to you.
Okay.
James, did you want to talk about one of your picks?
Yes, I want to kind of keep the wholesome train going because
yeah,
my tastes tend to veer towards not super wholesome and happy.
Sure.
So I tried really hard to get at least one like sweet, nice pick on here. And I had a couple. I thought maybe I would go with Bloom Into You, which is really cute.
Yeah.
It takes a little while to get going, but especially once you get to like the latter half of the manga, I think it really, really becomes like a sweet love story. But in the end, I went for The Moon on a Rainy Night.
Okay.
Which is...
You read that one kind of recently, didn't you? Is that a newer one?
Yeah, and yes, and I devoured it. Oh my goodness. It has six volumes out currently in English, and the seventh one is set to come out... it has five volumes out in English, and the last volume just ended on a huge cliffhanger.
No!
And the next volume is set to come out in December, and then there's a seventh volume in Japanese that I'm sure will be out at some point in 2025. But it's so sweet. It is about, because not only does it have a really positive representation with its two female characters who are, I don't want to spoil anything, but I guess I'll say that it's not the kind of manga where like they're going to start dating immediately, Yeah. But
like Sasaki and Miyano, where it's maybe like a little slower to start?
More that... because another thing the manga has is that one of the main characters has partial hearing loss.
Okay.
So she uses hearing aids and mm-hmm. she uses sign language to communicate. And so in addition to kind of navigating their emotions and the fact that like they obviously like each other and they're obviously like a lot more intimate and close than you would normally be with just a good friend, there's even more of like kind of a communication learning curve mm-hmm. because of like the physical communication barriers.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But it's also not, it's not like a silent voice where it uses the main character's disabilities as a source of like melodrama or okay. as a source of angst. I love a silent voice. I think a silent voice is great. Yeah. But, it can be both for queer manga and for manga about characters with disabilities, it can be kind of a little frustrating when it feels like it the focus is on all of like the pain and the ostracization and the bullying. And there's a little bit of that in Moon on a Rainy Night, but so much of it is about how people with disabilities, people who live kind of outside of cultural norms, can still live really happy and fulfilling and satisfying lives. It's just that the challenges that they have to overcome can be really unique compared to the everyday challenges that we see in our usual stories.
Right.
So it's really cute. It's really sweet. The art is gorgeous. I love the character art. So I really, really recommend Moon on a Rainy Night.
I was blinding people. There was like this shine that was catching right behind me. So I had to fix that real quick. Yeah, that one sounds really good. And I like a story when, you know, a character might have a disability or something, but it, again, it's not like always about, oh, this is awful and everyone like everyone's weird to me all the time, you know. It's just that. So all right, so the next one that I want to recommend is called Boys Run the Riot, which is this great manga. Again, takes place in high school, and the main character is Ro, and Ro is a transgender boy. Their school environment is not super supportive as far as like when it comes to gender identity and like presenting how he wants. So he is struggling with that, but he makes a friend with this guy named Jin, who's a new transfer student. And they're both kind of also into like the alt scene as far as like alternative art, like graffiti kind of street art and streetwear and stuff like that. And so the two of them get together and decide to start their own street fashion brand. And the brand is called Boys Run the Riot.
That's awesome.
So this is like, I mean, it's already got like really great like interiority to the characters. And then I personally have like kind of an interest in fashion anyway. So that was like a good hook for me on top of that. And you don't see quite as many stories about transgender boys. So, and if I remember correctly, the author is also transgender, so they're writing from a place of experience too. So again, we have a review for that one in the spring 2021 manga guide if you wanted to go get a couple of takes on like how that one is. But I really enjoyed it. I think the art is really good, and it feels very like kind of hip too with the street art and fashion and stuff.
Yeah, I think one of the manga has such an interesting kind of what would you call it? Not monopoly, but manga is like one of those industries and art forms where like fashion stories are like really a thing you can do really easily.
Yeah.
Cause you don't see you see it sometimes in live action film, but you know, it's rarer.
Yeah.
And obviously it's hard to do in books because a part of the point is to admire the fashion, and
right,
it's hard to communicate in language. And with manga, especially because manga lets itself be so stylized and so impressionistic sometimes, it's so cool the ways that they can marry the aesthetic of the fashion with the actual art style. And I love that we get so many cool fashion manga.
Yeah. Yeah. Another one that's like, that also has like queer elements to it, but I can't remember if it's still is Paradise Kiss, which is like a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard all about Paradise Kiss. My wife loves that one.
Yeah. Okay. James, what was your next one?
All right. So taking a turn into the tragic, but not, I don't think, exploitatively tragic.
Yeah.
Is, The Summer Hikaru Died.
I love this book.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's so good. And
yeah.
And again, I'll say up front that I think it's so weird because on the one hand, I think the horror space in general has really been a haven for queer creators.
Yeah.
Because horror is so often the genre where outsiders are able to thrive because, you know, horror fans are so often the queer kids, the kids of color, the non-conforming kids, whether we're talking about gender or just like personal identity or political identity. And so you so often see so many different diverse types of identities kind of coalesce in the space. At the same time, it gets a little tricky, and I think we'll talk about this with another entry later, especially now when you're using kind of horror tropes, tropes with monsters, tropes with body horror, in a way that can be read as maybe analogous to the experience of a queer person or a non-conforming person. But I think when the characterization is as strong as in The Summer Hikaru Dies, yeah. when the way that they're capturing just small town life, small town country life yes. is so yeah. vivid, I think it becomes really clear that it's not just taking a cheap and easy route of saying, oh no, my emotions as a teenager in love are analogous to being a monster. It's so much more nuanced than that. And for those who don't know, The Summer Hikaru Died is about a boy, Hikaru, who disappears one day in the woods of his kind of backwoods country town, and a week later shows back up again. And only his very, very close friend, Yoshiki, recognizes that it is not Hikaru.
Yeah.
It is something else. And that's not a spoiler. Like, literally in the first, like, 5 pages of the manga, that yeah. is made very apparent. And that sort of thing makes it so interesting, because it would be so easy to, like, have, you know, a character who is, you know, developing some very intimate, potentially confusing feelings for another boy. The other boy ends up being coded as kind of like a monster. Like, that would be kind of an easy metaphor. But yeah. the fact that he knows that this isn't Hikaru.
Yeah.
And still wants to be with him as a friend or whatever.
Yeah.
That, I think, makes it so much more compelling. I love that angle. The fact that he's like, look, I know you're not Hikaru, but hey.
It's like, better than no Hikaru, right? Yeah. There's yeah. this whole element of like it feels wrong to him, but also that he is just like, he's not processing his grief. Mm-hmm. And he's got issues going on at home. We have a great interview that I did with the creator of The Summer Hikaru Died up on ANN. It went up a couple weeks ago, but please read it, because I love this manga so much. And we do talk a little bit about the eroticism in the story. There isn't any, I wouldn't say that there's any sex in it, but you could
there's
say
not there's not any traditional penetration.
Yeah, there's no traditional penetration in
if
it.
If you've seen Videodrome, David Cronenberg would
love this, wouldn't he? Yeah.
This manga owes a lot to Mr. Cronenberg.
It does. PKMNJ fan. Yes, it did get announced for an anime adaptation. I am eagerly awaiting more details on that. Maybe
we'll
find out.
Do we know what studio yet?
No, I don't. I bet we won't know till next year if I had to guess. But yeah, so that Summer Hikaru's Died, that has a firm stamp of approval from me as well. Okay, so my last one. This one's more of a classic. It's short. It's 4 volumes. And this is Our Dreams at Dusk, also known as Shimanami Tasogare. And this is by Yuki Kamatani, who is a non-binary manga creator. This story is, again, a high schooler. Their name is Tasuku Kaname. And they're new in town. They're having like a hard time fitting in. And he's just recently been outed as gay. Like he didn't come out willingly. He was outed after a classmate found some stuff on his phone, you know. And so, you know, he is dealing with that ostracization. He's thinking really negative thoughts about what to do about it now that he's been outed. But instead he finds a place that's called like a drop-in cafe. And it's sort of just like a meeting place. It's those third spaces that we miss so much, where people just kind of go and then they just like hang out and they talk and they get coffee and stuff. But it's primarily queer. So he meets a variety of like older gay people, which is also really important, just to kind of have a role model or someone to look at and be like, hey, like you can be a successful person, or you can live this way or that way. And that's like a valid choice, and you can exist in society and enjoy your life. So it's him sort of learning more about himself through these people and having that kind of safe space to be himself.
Yeah. I was just, I just muted myself because I didn't want the keys to be all clackety clackety, because I wanted to look up the minute you mentioned the third spaces. It's Kaz Rowe did a video just recently on the queer, specifically lesbian, but really a whole lot of different communities, the bars and the salons of like World War I era Europe.
Okay.
And one of like the thesis statements of the video was that those third spaces, the physical third spaces, are so important for minority communities and ostracized communities, because that sense of safety and that sense of togetherness is so much stronger when you can physically be near other people that you know will not harm you, will not judge you, will not, you know. So yeah, I can absolutely see how that story would really hit home for people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how much like this platform itself is used, but people might want to try just meetups.com, which like I have used to find board gaming groups near me, pagan groups near me when I was practicing that. You can find all kinds of stuff as far as like third spaces where people meet regular time, even if it's just a book club or something. And usually they have age ranges on there. And I mean, kind of circling all the way back, libraries have a lot of third spaces for teens. There's usually like a teen club sort of room there, and events that occur regularly around a whole bunch of different topics.
Educational events that, you know, you can learn things with new people. You can
crafting of different kinds. D&D. I've seen tabletop gaming at local libraries, stuff like that. That's why it's really important that we protect them and care about this issue. So
as someone that is proudly married to an incredible librarian,
I
have to say, libraries are cool as shit, you guys.
Yeah.
And we should definitely pay more taxes to support them here in the States, because they are an invaluable resource. And again, just to your point, Lindsay, I would argue that one of the things that makes them so valuable, in addition to allowing people to access all sorts of knowledge and materials that they might not otherwise have access to, is it is a place where people can genuinely come together as a community. And that's really important, especially when there are boneheads in your community trying to tell you that you don't have a right to exist.
And I remember hearing too that like one of the great things about libraries as well is it's one of like the few places where you're not expected to buy anything to be there.
No.
You can just be at the library.
You can't buy anything.
No, you can just be at the library looking at a book, and you can be there for hours and no one cares, as long as you're just minding your own business, reading books or using their computers or whatever it is you want. Like there's no,
And let me tell you, the people working at libraries put a lot of effort into making the space feel welcome. Even for, you know, like, people experiencing homelessness and, you know, children or, you know, other members of the community that the library knows do not have another safe space. Like, it's not an accident that, you know, people without homes, people without safe spaces wind up in the library. That's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. Yeah. So I hope you guys take our list and maybe try out something new and visit your local library, support it. And if you happen to be in one of the states where a lot of this is happening, you know, show up to those school board meetings and voice your opinions there. There's a lot that you can do grassroots wise to support folks. Even if you don't have a lot of monetary means to do it, it could just be making sure the people around you know that you're a safe space and that your house is a safe space and that you care. So.
Also, I know we've gone very long on this topic, but can I have a minute to shout out DRCL?
Yeah. Sorry. Yes, please do.
My third pick is DRCL Midnight Children by, I need to make sure I get the name right, Shinichi Sakamoto. And it's one of the most incredible manga I've ever read in my entire goddamn life. So not only does it take Dracula, like just the story of Dracula with all of the characters from Dracula, Mina, Lucy, I'm assuming Van Helsing is going to, you know, Van Helsing is going to be popping up, Quincy.
Yeah. There, right? Yeah.
Not only does it take that text and transform it, it incorporates its themes of gender identity and, you know, gender conformity incredibly well. It's not like, it's not just some surface level reimagining of Dracula where they're, you know, just changing things around a bit to be able to get a copyright on it. Right.
Yeah.
It is truly like, Sakamoto takes the text of Dracula, like the word for word text, and pulls specific lines, specific quotes that can be so easily tweaked and rearranged to explore all of these different aspects of femininity and masculinity and, you know, what society deems monstrous and what society deems taboo, right? And it's so, so cool. And also every single page of that book is a work of art that should be framed in a museum. Yeah. I can't emphasize that enough. Like, it's
just gonna plug for a second. It won best new manga at the American Manga Awards. That happened to be the award that I got to present this year. So that was very exciting.
Hell yeah.
We'll have an interview with Sakamoto Sensei up on ANN in the near future. It is relevant to this conversation. So, because I've already read it. So just look out for that. With that being said, we're going to shift gears and we're going to talk about Dead Demons to Destruction, which also comes with a disclaimer from me. I would have done this last time we were here, but I forgot and then couldn't edit it in. So for all y'all who were curious about those subtitles, the subtitle issues that, you know, we've talked about on here and it was talked about in the reviews, and, you know, I didn't want to point fingers at anyone in particular, and I'm still not going to do that now because there's apparently more kind of going on behind the scenes, but we want to like kind of clear some things up, some assumptions that may have been made regarding the dub titles. So, and the timing issues with those subtitles, which the timing issues, by the way, got fixed around episode 8, and I don't know if they've gone back and fixed them. But for a while we had some timing issues and there were also subtitles missing from any like on-screen text, which was kind of a big problem. Mm-hmm. Anime News Network was contacted by Ocean Group, who is a Canadian studio. They are providing the dub for this series and they are providing the subtitles for that dub. And they let us know that the dub titles were never intended and is actually against their company policy to have those dub titles used as subtitles for the series. So while they created the dub and the corresponding closed captions for the dub and were responsible for use of their closed captions, they were not responsible for those closed captions being used as the subtitles for the Japanese language track.
Okay.
And
that's very good. That's very important to know, I think.
So that's just to clarify, like if you were, you know, frustrated with that issue, and we'd had some comments on ANN, like in the forums about, you know, Ocean Group failing to yada yada. It wasn't them that did it. They've come out and said that it would be against their company policy for the closed caption subtitles for the English language track to be used as subtitles for the Japanese language track. And it was never their intention for them to be used that way.
Okay.
So after clarifying that, let's talk about, we've got 2 episodes of both series to talk about. So we may run a little long. I hope no one minds, but episode 13 specifically of Dead Demons Dead to Destruction was clarifying, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah, I did that really classic thing where you take a character that doesn't know anything about what's going on.
Like us.
You use them as a perspective character.
Yeah.
And that way someone can explain to them, hey, confused person, here's the lowdown.
Yes,
which exactly. I thought was great. I thought it was a really great way to both allow this show to kind of play around with time and be a little ambiguous, but then once we need it, says, okay, just so we all are on the same page, here's what's happening with,
yes,
with Hidode and with Onton.
Yes, yes. And so the 2 characters we have on screen right now is Makoto, and that is the perspective character. Makoto kind of joined the group later, has quickly made friends with everyone on this beach trip, but, you know, is not...
Makoto's so great in this episode.
Makoto is great. Yeah, in this episode.
A treasure.
Yes. And everyone's t-shirts are also really funny through these next 2 episodes. But, you know, came in late on all the alien sci-fi stuff. Just really recently kind of found out that Oba here, who is officially Oran's boyfriend, is an alien in someone else's body. But Oran goes out for a walk because she has the doohickey. Mm-hmm. But Oba is concerned that she's gonna not time travel, but timeline hop again. And so that's where
she's gonna quantum leap.
Yeah, basically she's gonna quantum leap again into another version of herself in another timeline. And I feel like, all the explanation and stuff aside, the big takeaway from this episode is that the reason the world's about the to end and the aliens are in such a bad position is because Ouran time hopped and saved Kadode.
It's just like we were talking last time.
Yeah.
It's a Madoka situation.
Yes.
Where we have a character who is deciding that the entire universe could suck it as long as her girl gets to be safe.
Yeah.
It's still ambiguous how much this Ouran knows.
Yeah.
There is one shot that implies that she is remembering more than she's letting on.
Yeah.
About like her goal and her purpose. But still she is actively homeboy here, the investigator, the scout, he hasn't gotten a name.
Really. Yeah, I don't think he's gotten a name, but yeah, the investigator.
He basically said, I am going to go and tell my alien friends to not invade the planet.
Yeah, because so you guys off your rockers. Yeah,
you guys suck and will probably try to kill us.
Yes.
However, if you save Kadode, it is possible, nay, likely, that I will not tell my friends to call out the invasion, and you might be responsible for the death of every human being on Earth.
And that's where we're at right now.
Cool.
She's like, I'll take it because I care about her that much. Yeah. Which was pretty sweet. And, you know, she reassures, I just want to show this because it's so cute. They have their first little smooch.
I know. I ship them so hard to use the parlance of our internet.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's probably not going to end well on account of, you know, 5 days to the end of humanity.
Yeah.
As it flashes. I just want those kids to be happy.
I just want those kids to make it. I just want them to make it, right? And we also find out that maybe Ouran's brother, he didn't time hop with her, but I kind of wonder if he remembers anything.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, because at first I was like, oh, is he going to like go after her? Like, is he going to?
Yeah.
Because he says, I'll come too.
Right. But, yeah. But, yeah. But then he doesn't get in the tube.
I think it's just to maybe show the strength of that bond that like he's always been the brother who is, you know, he basically has like a little, like a sister complex, but not in like a pervy way.
Yeah.
He's just kind of obsessed with her and would do anything for her.
She's the cutest, basically, right?
The reason he's become kind of a shut-in is because he wants to make sure that she always has someone to come home to. It's like real sweet.
Yeah, yeah. I like their relationship a lot. I think that's super cute.
I hope he doesn't die. I hope they all don't die.
Yeah, right. Right, because that is kind of where things are going, because in the next episode, we don't see that group at all. And instead, it actually switches to these two ladies for like the first half. I don't know the newscaster's name, to be honest. I don't know if we were told her name or not. She's the one in the white mask. And she's holding her camera with her. And then the woman to her right is an artist who she's living with her elderly mother in
the contaminated black smoke district.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, was in their TV special. And then once it airs, she's very upset because she thinks that it makes them look like they're leeching off the government or something like that, which I was confused at first how she came to that conclusion, because I don't know how anyone watching that would be like, yeah, they're just leeching off the government by living in a highly contaminated area. That's not like a trade-off anyone would do out of like funsies, but
I kind of got that though. You know, especially like when you live in an area where I do, where you're constantly hearing rhetoric about how, you know, people that use public welfare systems are like inherently leeching off of the taxpayer. Like,
it's, yeah.
You know, the fact that they emphasize like how meager her income is and how, you know, their income is, they basically rely on the subsidy to survive because, you know, she only makes like $800 a month.
Yeah. Just doing like freelance illustration jobs.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, they did make it seem like her mom played up her,
dementia.
Her dementia. I mean, even
that she
I
may
was
or
like,
may not even have.
Yeah, that she may or may not even have. I mean, she said her mom has been had it for 10 years. And I did the math. I'm like, 61's really early onset for dementia. Mm.
And 10 years is a long time to live with dementia. Like, it happens, but
yeah,
you know, that's a degenerative disease. Like,
yes, yes. And, you know, and they also draw into question, like, she asked her if she has a medical certificate to prove she has ADHD, which I assume is like more of a Japan thing.
I was going
to
say.
I'm just like, no one gave me a certificate from any of my diagnosis. Hang it on your wall.
What are you trying to say?
Yeah. So,
although I will say it was kind of odd. I don't think I've ever heard an anime mention ADHD before.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. I was also like, as well.
Okay.
Like, okay.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But they meet sort of negative ends and then it just kind of drops them, right?
We're like, yeah, I figured there'd be like some
follow
like
up
cut back to them just to like show that they did indeed die horribly getting crushed by a building. Maybe it'll like come back to them in a future episode. Like,
maybe I kind of wonder if the whole point was here are average people doing doing what they need to do in a regular day, but also the giant UFO is falling apart.
Yeah.
And so what happens to them is a direct result of that. And there's some commentary about how like they can't get anyone to come help them because the newscaster has no real human connections. She just lives on social media all the time. So she can't call anyone.
What was your line? Like, my social media profile is my life.
Or
like
my,
you know, I was like, oh God, that is too real.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I was like, maybe I need to log off. we know that so it just kind of like touches in, like everything's falling apart for everyone from what I can tell. Right. Like the UFO is falling apart, but there's some comments from the aliens that kind of makes it sound like their government screwed them over too.
Yeah, that one guy's like, I got a directive to basically make it so that we couldn't fix the ship, even if we wanted to. Like, we were told to sabotage ourselves to basically put us. I mean, so to me, that sounds very like that's a very not to be stereotypical, but like a very kind of Japanese way of.
Oh.
I've heard many stories, for instance, about like when the Japanese were occupying. The Pacific Islands, like Guam and Saipan, how officers would do things like, throw away all the food stores or basically turn the situation into we cannot escape, we cannot get home, we are going to die here, and that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
The idea of like you engineer the suicide mission in order to get whatever result you want. Obviously, other governments have done that too, but I can see how that would resonate with the Japanese culture. That idea of like you're gonna do exactly what you're told, even if
or like maybe they would have done it that way because we're like we're sending you to this planet and you're taking over this planet and you're not failing and coming back after you screw up taking over this planet. It's just. So maybe in that respect, that it's why it was made that way. Mm. But I mean, the big thing, I don't know who they hired to do the Trump president voice.
James. I felt attacked watching this.
I did.
I should not have to think of that man when I am watching my Japanese cartoons. Damn it. It is election season in this hellhole here of 2024. I have to hear that man's voice every goddamn day. I don't need to hear a fake stupid version of his voice in day-to-day.
It was funny though in a way because he's also like being horribly crass, so you know immediately that's who they're trying to invoke before like the voice cadence even kicks in, because he's just like they're shitholes. Yeah. Do you think they made his hands small on purpose?
Of course they did.
But no, he just starts talking completely crass. I can't quote anything he says, but it's just like, you know, this place is a shithole and they're a bunch of, you know, fucked up da, 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 and you're like, wow, that's not how a president should talk. And then the cadence clicked. I'm like, oh, that's supposed to be
and Trump. Then you're like, oh no, that's definitely how presidents have talked in recent history, actually.
Yeah. actually.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Almost word for word.
Yeah. But so like the end of the episode kind of devolves into this like CIA US Japan plot, which had kind of been simmering there because the Japanese government was like, oh yeah, we need to move away from codependence against America. But then like there's kind of an info dump where they're like, yeah, the Americans built back doors into all of our internet and yada yada yada, and they can they know what we're doing all the time.
Yeah, the one part of the show that I'm not like sold on yet is the whole like plankton AI subplot thing, just because it has been such a background element where it's the only time the show is really just told us that something is important without really selling it.
Yeah. So like I'm fully expecting a I can't do that Dave in the future with this plankton AI and the woman running it, right?
Well, she knows the minute the AI calls you mom, you're cooked.
Yeah.
Like that you're already done. Like it's Skynet's happening. Like it's
over. Yeah. She's the only one definitely getting out of here. But you know, and there's murmurings that like I mean he's dead now, so we don't know, but that the, because they had that journalist wandering around about how her boss was actually an invader. And she's like, that's stupid. He like joined the company 6 years ago, you know, all this other kind of stuff. But
how did evil gay get in? I know he got in with the invisibility cloak.
Yeah. Yes. He got in with the invisibility cloak as far as like,
why was he there?
I feel like I need to go back and watch an episode or so because I'm like, he probably overheard something. Or, you know, the guy's tapped...
I feel like the last time we saw him, he just got the invisibility cloak.
Yeah, but you know, he's tapped into conspiracy internet. And if there's any kind of conspiracy about stuff, it's probably this company. So I could see him sneaking in for that reason. If there isn't a more definitive one that I'm forgetting.
He's terrifying.
He is terrifying.
He's like, the fact that she goes with him, I honestly thought was funny. When he's like, I'll show you what it means to be valued in society. It's like, no, don't go with him. No.
Yeah. And then she helps him just wipe out what's left of the little aliens in that zone. And now he's got their science. That's what she's holding here is he's got one of their memory thingies and he's got one of their head propeller thingies. But I mean, that doesn't mean he'll figure out how to use them unless she helps him maybe, but
I mean, apparently all you have to do with the orange thing is stick your finger in. So I could see him getting a big old blast of alien memory, whatever.
Yeah, I was worried at first because I mixed it up with the thing that Oron stepped in. I was like, wait, is he going to be able to like hop through timelines now? But he can only like view them. So
the worst John Titor imaginable.
Yeah.
I've come from the future to spread conspiracy theories and red pill all of your men.
I feel like the only person who could take him out for it to like make sense like in context of the story, or also what I would most like to see is for Hiroshi to do it. Because they're both super online, this Oron's brother.
Oh right, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I knew it wasn't clicking, it's fine. Yeah, yeah, Oron's brother, because I feel like they are like mirror images.
Yes, he's like, in a way, right? He's like the best case scenario of a terminally online 20 something in the 20th century, in the 21st century.
Yes.
In the middle of an alien invasion. We're like, yeah, he could probably stand to log off more.
Yeah.
But he's at least being kind to people.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah. So I can only hope that like he steps in to undo this, but I don't like this guy getting more power. And I still also keep remembering this is an Inio Asano story, so the ending could just be really sad and despair. So
I'm preparing myself. I mean, we cannot say we have not been warned.
Yeah,
we've been getting that countdown to the end of humanity for many weeks.
Yes.
So we would only have ourselves to blame if we got our hopes up.
If we allowed ourselves.
It was just like, guys, I told you, like, I warned you 5 days. Like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
Okay, so I guess that's. Hold on, I hit a thing that made my browser go weird, and I had four things all spread out on the screen. Yeah, I think that's about it for Dead Demon. Great show. Yeah, great show. Still greatly animated. Great music, too. And just, 100% awesome. all the time.
Or did we say Oren has the doohickey?
Oh yeah, so Oren has the doohickey.
She's totally gonna shoot someone.
She is gonna. She's got yeah, and she got it from Futaba because she did chicken out, which you know,
good.
Glad she's not committing a murder. Someone else ended up killing the guy, so you know. But yeah, she asks Futaba if she can just throw it into the ocean, and then Futaba's like, "No, they find it." And then she chastises her for that. She's like, "You ran away from your responsibility, and now you're telling me I can't also throw this into the ocean."
But then there's that shot of her like hiding the gun, and now I'm like, "Oh no, don't give this girl a gun. She's already, she is fully committed to killing all of mankind for her silly friend."
I was half expect. Okay, so Lindsay, alternate sad ending. Is I was expecting her to time hop with the gun and like just have a really great day with Kodote. And they
is she gonna Lenny Kodote? Look at the Isobe on merch across the river. Just keep looking, Kodote.
For those of you don't know, that's Mice and Men, by the way. Yes. For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about.
No, I don't think she can time hop stuff. I think it's just her mind. I think we're going Steins Gate rules.
Okay, so she couldn't bring the doohickey with her.
I thought you were gonna say that she's gonna to shoot Oban. Or is
and some sort of horrible mistake, possibly.
Or like on purpose, where it's like the only way to save Kodote is to kill her, you know.
Why would that work?
I don't I am sure the show could find a way.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know. I guess we'll see, right? Did she not take anything with her? I guess not when she
hopped. Just her brain.
Just her brain. Okay. All right. We're over, but we still got to get to...
Bird Show
with evil monkeys. So,
God, all right. The show is so good.
It's so good. Also, Prince is still hot. He's still super hot. Even when he's not really doing anything, but
he's healing the tears in reality.
He's healing that was a cool concept sort of to come out, because it's like, well, are the humans on the other side of that though?
There's something on, you know.
What if modern Japan is on the other side of that?
Oh, I would believe it 100%.
I would scream. I would scream.
Especially because they've been the minute you introduce this weird, secluded fantasy world, and then you say no one can go outside of, you know, the minute you introduce the village rules, the answer is almost always modern Earth. Is something that we're saying? Modern times, right? Or something like that. You know, aliens, space, maybe. Like,
yeah.
Because every book is so different. I would not be shocked if, like, book five, it turns out they're all on the moon.
Yeah, I was gonna say Mars, but yeah, exactly.
It's a VR simulation.
Oh no. Yeah, there's so many possibilities. So what I really liked about this episode, even though the prince spends most of it like shooting arrows, is we get kind of this cool dynamic between Kome and Yukiya, where she's still hiding some stuff from him, but we get a better sense of like how difficult her life has been, but also how they're both making presumptions about each other. And then they have this great moment where they, my dinner is ready. they have this great moment where they relate to one another to kind of realize, well, he doesn't tell her about him, but while she's saying all the things that she's been through, I was thinking about Yukiya and his family's actually way more complicated than she knows, right?
It's true.
She's like, you wouldn't understand because you have two parents that love you and you have all this access to wealth and everything. It's like, his mom's dead.
Yeah. I was in the middle of Bird Glass Onion just like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Yukiya has problems too, okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he does. Basically, the fact that he keeps trying to live sort of a mediocre nobleman's son's life and people keep pulling him into crap and he can't escape. So
I laughed out loud when the prince's brother was like, no, it's way too dangerous for the prince to go investigate this underground criminal society that we've had secret ties to for generations. Yukiya will go. And Yukiya's like, what?
Yeah.
I didn't ask for this.
Also, like, my as far as like combat skills. I think the prince is probably several levels above him too. I'm like, you can't send Yuki on there. He will get killed.
I mean, he held his own against like the thugs that were gonna like beat him up when Kome was around. But you know, you're right. I mean, especially in these episodes, the prince definitely shows off his combat skills.
Yes, yes.
When he straight up murders a child.
He does, yeah. So we won't hang on her too long, but just happy that Hamayu's back. She offers Yuki a snacks, which is just like the best, and she's just being his body double, more or less, which is I think
she's
is
like Yuki is drunk, like but cool drunk aunt. Like,
yes. Hey, yes.
Come on in.
We also got to see her name's always really long, but we also got to see her again because she's working as a lady in waiting for Hamayu, which leads to this very funny scene where after Prince Nazuka makes Yukiya go instead of the prince is sulking and Hamayu is actually on the prince's side. And then she lets her lady in waiting come in. But Sumio, right? Like he sided against the prince. They're like, you have to stay out there.
Yeah.
Like, you can't come in the clubhouse. We're all really mad at you. Yeah. So.
No, it's great. And I love how this show is really, I was telling my wife, it feels like I'm reading a great long book series.
Yeah.
Where, like, you have these characters that have these like pre-established dynamics. And even though like they're not really related to the current story that's going on, they can still drop in and like contribute in their own little ways. It just feels like such a real lived in world at this point.
Yeah. No one just seems to like disappear really. I mean, I guess the lady who did a murder is not, she's not around anymore, but
she's got to come back some at some point though. Right.
No, it's bad.
I feel like she has to come back. She should get like a Vegeta arc.
You think
she comes back and she's like a surly, like jackass, but she like, Or like a Hannibal arc.
Oh,
where like
yeah.
She has like a bird Hannibal mask and she's like tied to a thing. And she's like, I was wondering when you'd come back to see me, Prince. They all come crawling back eventually.
Oh man, I can see it. I can see it all too well. Okay. But that's in our imaginations. What really happens is Prince Natsuka and Rokan, who is still like huge, and Yukiya, and then some like guards or whatever, all go down to the underworld base because there's been this long existing treaty that they don't hurt one another, but something going on with Kome may be jeopardizing that. So they go down there, and Natsuka finds out that he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. That they don't give a crap about all this like courtly sending people in his stead or anything like that. That the prince was supposed to show and he didn't, and now they've insulted them.
They told Yukiya.
Yeah.
They said, we want to talk to the prince because y'all have been messing with our treaties, and that's not cool.
Yeah. So we were nice enough not to do the crime in front of you. And that was working out for 50 years, but now it's not working out anymore. And also our leader looks like M. Bison in a different outfit.
Yeah.
Just huge. Huge.
He looks like, you know what he looks like? He looks like James Brolin Thanos, but like painted human colors. The
colors, yes, and a purple.
He looks like Thanos.
He does. He does look like Thanos.
James Brolin.
Yes. Yes. Oh man. But they're not without reason. So I mean, that kind of. And we find out that the previous leader is not dead. He's just like, you know, retired, I guess. And they're like, yeah, okay, we'll tell you about the monkeys, Yukiya. But first, you got to go retrieve a shard from this scary tunnel that we keep locked away. And also the monkeys live there.
And also it's filled with bones.
Bones. It's filled with bones.
It's the tunnel from the descent. And Yuki is immediately like, oh, great.
Cool. Great. Yeah.
I just wanted to chill at my house and hang out with my family.
Yeah.
And now I'm in this evil skull cave fighting off rabid monkey children.
And I only have 2 hours before they just shut the door on me. The criminal underworld mob boss just shuts the door on me. So, yeah, Pui Pui Molesaw says, go on the impossible quest first. Lol, being Yukia is suffering. Yeah, it is. This poor kid. We don't know how the prince got himself in here, but he did. And he straight, these are kid monkeys.
They're children.
They were children like, monkeys.
They are explicitly children.
And there's some grown-up monkeys coming behind him. But, you know, Yukia's actually seems like he's doing okay, kind of just hand fight, you know, fisty cuffing them because again, they're not large monkeys. They're just, they're like barely bigger than a capuchin or whatever. Okay. And then the prince shows up and he just decapitates one of them.
Yeah. Graphically. And without hesitating.
Yeah.
Which is, I honestly, I think really cool. I don't think the murder of the monkey is cool, but I think it's cool that the show is immediately complicating things where they made them kids on purpose. Like we are meant to go, oh no.
Yeah.
Maybe shouldn't kill all the monkeys.
Yeah.
Maybe actually going to be a bad thing that the prince is doing.
Because we still, there's still this drug situation going on and it's got to tie into that somehow.
Yeah.
And why are these monkeys just living underground here and no one has known about them for how long? Why are they down there? Why doesn't anyone know about them? Why are, you know.
Did they like, was this one of those things where, like they actually used to live on the surface and then the ravens came and took all their shit and said, all right. It could down be. To the caves.
It could be. It could be that the criminals have trapped them all down there and are harvesting something from them to make drugs.
Not good. Also, Yukia didn't get a kumquat. He didn't even get a kumquat for all the services rendered.
No kumquat. Yeah.
It would have been hilarious if, like, as Yukia was diving back into the water, the prince just tosses him a kumquat and then proceeds to murder all of these monkey children.
Oh man. God. And I mean, the episode preview kind of implies that like they're going to get closed in and have to find another exit because they're almost out of time. And they talked about in the episode preview, like navigating the labyrinth. So I don't think they're just going back out the way they came.
No.
So.
And we only have three episodes left.
Yeah. I don't know. Dedede is 18 episodes total. This is episode 17. So I would expect this to, I think we have more than that. I think we might have closer to 5.
Well, no, because, well, but isn't Yatagarasu is on like 17, right?
Yeah. Is there only 20 episodes
of it?
I
think there's only 20. I know.
It's not a full second season. No. I thought we'd have like 24 or 25.
No, I seem to recall us having this conversation where
I blocked it out because I was so upset.
I've been dreading it, honestly. I don't, this can't end. What are we going to talk about next? Oh. I know we're going to talk about next season. That's obvious. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Really good. It's going to be really good. All right, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us while we talked about anime and got like kind of, you know, really into the earlier conversation. It's important. So appreciate everyone for sticking around. We'll be back again Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. This is the ANN After Show. Follow us on X at anime or follow us on YouTube at Anime News Network. We're also on TikTok and Instagram, where we've got new videos going up like 4 or 5 times a week. So
yeah.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I just realized I was just going to end the stream without playing the outro, James. This will be cut from the audio version. I promise. Why can't I find my thing? Okay, bye.